1690 AM in Montreal.
For CJLO News, I'm Serena Abuljood. Representatives of Quebec's business community voiced their criticism of certain measures taken by the provincial government in protection of the French language. On Saturday, multiple economic organizations added their signatures in an open letter to the Legault government, asking them to reassess their stance on the matter. These organizations view the latest measures as pressuring companies to make changes that are difficult to enact in a short amount of time. They stated the government had given them 3 years to implement rules that are yet to be adopted. Bill 96 was passed in 2022. Some of the measures concerning businesses were only introduced in January. While the final version still hasn't been sanctioned, the deadline for their complete submission to Quebec's new regulations is June 1, 2025. The president of the Quebec branch of the RCC, Michel Rochette, stated that Quebec businesses had already undergone an entire transformation that was barely completed 5 years ago, and so all of the altered signs will have to be redesigned within a shorter period of time. He also pointed out that the signage might be subjected to limitations that can only be dictated by municipalities and building owners. Concerns surrounding the impact these regulations will leave on supply were also communicated in the letter. Rochette said that they can do much more than keep in touch. Despite the Canadian press's request for comment, the French language ministry hasn't been very responsive. For more, follow CJLO News on Spotify.
Hello, good evening. You're listening to Psychic Ceremony on CJLO 1690 AM. My name is Josh, and this is a very special episode because I have, for the first time with me in the studio, a live session prepared. As you may know, this is the first week of Ambient April, where CJLO is pivoting towards a lot of ambient programming, which I'm very happy about because I'm well set up to facilitate that. And in the studio today with me, I have the duo of Adam Cantor and David Barton, who have just released their first album as Parametric, titled What is Music? In January, just came out January 15th of this year. Adam hosts Radio Saint Zotiqua on CJLO, which airs on Tuesdays at 10 p.m. But from the album's liner notes, Adam and David describe their music as the instantiation of ambient music and practice, which asks what is assumed and what is discarded when one moves between the boundaries of musical idioms. Their music is grounded in the improvisational blending of traditional acoustic forms with electronic instrumentation. I'm very excited to present this duo as the first ever live session on Psychic Ceremony, and they're going to perform live here in just a few moments before joining me in the studio to talk about their project. You can listen to and purchase their album on Bandcamp and keep up with them on Instagram. Their Instagram is at parametric_music. So without further ado, here is Parametric playing In the Audio at CJLO.
flowers to discover. Full Bloom is a living garden of 12 songs that celebrates the beauty and the seasonal nature of life. You can find Full Bloom wherever you listen to music. Visit thekristencarter.com or follow at Kristen Carter Music for more. Funded by Factor and Canada's private radio broadcasters.
Are you interested in international vintage music? Have you been watching too much Wong Kar-wai? Well then tune in on Tuesdays at 2 o'clock for Hellespont, a show dedicated to old tunes from around the world. We've got Korean psych rock, we've got Iranian ballads, we've got Japanese post-punk. We've got everything. Explore the beauty of voices you might not understand.
CGLO 1690 AM. Sounds best? Crank to 11.
Welcome back to Psychic Ceremony on CJLO 1690 AM. My name is Josh. I hope you enjoyed Parametric's performance. I now have them here in the actual room with me, And we're gonna chat a bit about what we just heard and about their project. Very excited for this. So hi, Adam and Dave.
Hi.
Thank you for coming on the show today.
Josh, thanks for having us.
Yeah. So first off, I mean, maybe this is an annoying question, but I was actually really curious. Where does the name Parametric come from?
Dave is the one who gave us that name. However, I understood why after he explained it to me, so I'm able to answer the question. The parametric is anything that pertains to the perimeter. And so in many ways, you can say that our music is about perimeters and crossing perimeters, which you can also think of as boundaries or borders or liminal spaces or any crossing from one state to another. But then when you're in the act of crossing, you're also not in one state or the other state, but somewhat in both states and not really in either state at the same time. And even while you're crossing in the perimeter, you're crossing the perimeter of the perimeter and the other perimeter of the perimeter. And so it becomes this endless series of matryoshka-like steps that you have to take to cross perimeters. And so because we have so many different influences and styles and motivations for doing this, we're never quite in a genre per se. Say, for example, if it were 1988 and we both came in and we were wearing black leather pants and we were wearing our t-shirts that said Metallica and Testament and we had long hair and leather jackets, you'd say, yeah, I know exactly what these dudes are trying to accomplish, but we're a little more scattered than that.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I noticed, I mean, especially from your liner notes on Bandcamp, it struck me as Your aim is to really kind of subvert those dualisms that exist a lot in music, like analog, digital, acoustic, electronic. Adam, you mentioned in one of your emails that, I mean, you specifically, but I know both of you have quite a background in acoustic performance, for lack of a better word. Would you guys maybe like to talk about your backgrounds in music a bit?
Well, I mean, it really ties into what Adam's talking about this idea of parametric and perimeters and boundaries. Like you say, electronic music and acoustic music, mm-hmm. for example. So then, but with what we're doing is you can put acoustic in music into it. You can put an acoustic instrument, but even in the absence of it, we're making this music by hand. We're not using sequencers, and you know, we're not letting the machine do all the work for us. We're like play the arpeggios by hand. We're play the parts by hand, and even though the instrumentation is so different, that the process is very much the same. So like if we had a banjo and a mandolin, there are certain aspects of the way we would come together musically that are very present in what we're doing with this project.
Yeah.
So you know, that's, but then at the same time, if we put the drum machine on and played banjo and mandolin, it wouldn't be this.
Yeah.
So it's this idea of when is something the thing that it is? Where's the boundaries between things? When is a heap of rice.
Yeah. Like, so in that sense, I get the sense that you're really trying to, yeah, you mentioned avoiding quantization and like having the drum machine as the meter of things is a bit, maybe perhaps inhuman. Would that be a way to describe what you're trying to capture?
Yes and no, because we do actually have a drum machine and are going to use it in the next number.
Okay.
But I think that it's, as much as we make declarations about things, sometimes they don't apply. However, there are certain times that there seem to be certain boundaries that we didn't want to broach. And I can't tell you why those boundaries exist or don't exist. But mm-hmm. I mean, for example, we started playing music together some number of years ago, and I was playing the banjo and he the mandolin. So it was old-time music and bluegrass music.
Yeah.
And so on. And that was really the reality of it for a while, both as doing our own thing in our own groups, but also playing together sometimes. And so it seems like there isn't a lot of desire to bring that into this project. Or if he did show up with his mandolin and I did with my banjo, it wouldn't really be the parametric band. It would just be maybe jamming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on that note, how much of your compositional process comes from jamming versus a more, I guess, premeditated compositional structure? Do you guys, when you guys try to write stuff, are you kind of building off of what each other are doing? Or do you, I mean, more write things out in a traditional sense and then bring them to the other person and go from there? Does that make sense as a question?
It does, for sure.
The short answer is pretty close to 100%, basically 100%, and 0% notation.
Okay.
So they it's improvised, based on improvisations. It's everything that we've done, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, but everything we've done has started as an improvisation.
I think that that's true. There may have been some, there are some cases where we agree to change from one key to another key or a chord to another chord in the process. But I would say that even though we have named songs and put songs on albums, and there are other songs that have names and so on, and even the songs we're playing today, some would have names, it's not as though that song is recognizable from one performance of it to another.
Mm-hmm.
You could say that the one we just did is definitely in A minor, but other than that, it really doesn't feel like itself any other time or way.
Yeah, and that's also another aspect to the music making that made it across that perimeter, if you will, of that, mm-hmm. that boundary between old time and electronic music.
Yeah.
That when we play in keys.
Yes.
So you know that, I mean, well, obviously it's music, but I mean, in an old time session, you would, you know, get around to changing keys. So was it like, yeah, okay, this is the part that we just do, let's do this in A.
Yeah.
And you know, and stay in that. But the difference is then, instead of calling actual tunes, we just build up. Although we did play Wayfaring Stranger at the beginning of our set.
Yeah, we did. We did allude to that a little bit, for sure.
Did we play it or did we allude to it? I like that.
I think I alluded to it. I was touching on it.
Let your audience weigh in.
I was touching on Wayfaring Stranger / Summertime a little bit, but not necessarily playing those songs, just laying down a bit of that feeling before we fell out of it again. So right. There's some kind of nod to old time music there is,
and it also provides a framework, like, you know, chord changes in a way.
Yeah.
That when then we improvise over it, which is more, you know, in the jazz tradition. Yeah. But sometimes too, if I'll be working on my own and I'll come up with a sound on the guitar, for example, mm-hmm. that I'm thinking, or some effect that I'm thinking, well, we can build something off of this. And so then the next time we get together, we run it by Adam and then he'll jump in with whatever, and then it's 100% improvised.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the other thing is that we aren't really sticking. Well, I mean, we brought particular instruments today just because of the limitations of traveling on the bus to get over here and so on, but there have been a lot of stretches in the band where I was playing the bass instead of mm-hmm. messing around on the little keyboard. And I don't even really feel like I'm a keyboard player per se, but I'm just doing it for fun. But the manifestations of what we are kind of come apart and come back together again, you know, sort of like a eukaryotic slurry of cells breaking apart and reforming in new manifestations and yeah. styles and so on. So
that's actually very, I'm really fascinated by your history in old time music, which I wasn't previously aware of, because that strikes me as actually, like, in some ways a key expression of old time and bluegrass is that, like, the song is never really the same, you know, everyone's always putting a new spin on, like, you have kind of a skeleton, but sometimes two different tunes kind of weave into each other, you know, or someone's interpretation of one tune sounds a bit like another one, or, you know, the line between a new song and an old song is not always clear. I think, would you say that's a fair assessment? Because that to me kind of sounds as well like how you approach performance.
Well, I, you know, there's a recent example. Adam suggested that we do a cover of the theme song from the Mary Tyler Moore Show. And so I had to listen at it, and we didn't really do that exactly, but I find myself, there's a there's a phrase, there's a couple of phrases that come from that, and those definitely have ended up in stuff that we're doing.
Yeah, and I think that if it is a cover, it won't necessarily be a cover in a recognizable way, but it's interesting to, I really enjoy covers that take something in a completely different direction mm-hmm. and make it sound nothing like the original version. And those are my favorite kind of covers, even if they're absolutely terrible or they're great. Yeah, if you ever listen to Dolly Parton and Ladysmith Black Mambazo doing the reggae cover of Knocking on Heaven's Door, I'd say that's even though that's one of the worst songs I've ever heard, it also has inspired me a lot in terms of how freeing it is to not necessarily feel like you have to be enslaved to Bob Dylan's stylistic way of doing things. But that may be a conversation for another day.
Yeah, well, we might have ruffled some feathers by doing our rendition of Wayfaring Stranger. There's some old-time traditionalists who think like that's kind of sacrilegious.
Old-time is full of people who really police the music in a serious way in terms of very, very specific
authenticity,
but also really particular about the timing and half beats and skipped beats and little pieces that absolutely have to be played in mm-hmm. sync, which I understand because it makes it come together, but it also can get very boxed in by that.
Yeah. Would you say part of this project was maybe inspired by frustration with that ethos in different forms, or maybe consciously or subconsciously?
I still enjoy it a lot, and I can't speak for him, but I still go out and play my banjo all the time in old time settings.
Okay. Yeah. Are you a Grumpy's guy at the
for sure.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Cool.
So much so that yeah, well, anyway. Yes.
They wrote a book about it.
Oh, no way.
I was the person who started the Grumpy's Jam, whose name is Larry, one of them. Yeah, I was touring around with him in a band on the West Coast for quite a while. I've known about it since the very beginning, more or less, I guess.
No way. That's very cool. I went to two nights there a year ago, but I work on Thursday nights now, unfortunately, so it's not an option, but that's very cool to know about the bridging of the worlds, I guess. Cuz
bridges are definitely that's something. Actually, when we first came up with this idea or this concept of you know, focusing on that, not just as a name but as a way of working, and Adam pointed out this concept of a flavor bridge mm-hmm. in cuisine.
I would like to say that my professionally trained in chefing wife was the one who taught me about flavor bridges. So shout out to Justine, because she explained it in terms of food flavors and how to, if you have really different ingredients in a food, there can be a flavor bridge that somehow makes them make sense in your mouth.
Right. Like you wouldn't eat, if you ate from one to the other directly, the flavors would clash. Mm-hmm. But with the flavor bridge, it makes it possible to transition between the two. And so take this and apply it to music making, and you see that, okay, how do you get from one place to another, and what can hang together, and what does it take to make it hang together? And sometimes it's a flavor bridge.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's a really cool concept. I'm amazed you could bring the culinary world into our discussion too. yet another
I think it's a really
dimension.
I think it's a really even if they haven't necessarily thought it through entirely, I think it's a very common experience for musicians, because I find that people who don't play a lot of music often say to me or someone else, hey, I know someone else who's a musician, you two should just get together and jam and you're gonna have a great time. Mm-hmm. But very often that's not the case, and the two musicians will have a very, very difficult time figuring out what their flavor bridge is. Mm-hmm. And so it's much more challenging, and it can produce interesting results, but often it just produces two people who say, well, I'm not going to do that again.
Well, yeah. You know, also there's a lot of, at a certain point at the heart of it, when you think about what music making, it's art, and any art form, whether it's, you know, a cuisine or visual arts or music or perfume, right? Brian Eno got into mixing perfumes famously at a certain point, I don't know, a couple decades ago now, and I think about it. I was going to say more recently, but I think it's more than 20 years ago. But it seemed like the logical extension of, you know, taking the senses and perception, mixing it into something that's enjoyable to experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, ultimately, that's what we're doing. And, you know, trying to have some fun in the meanwhile, too.
Yeah. And make music that passes the smell test.
I'm going to play a quick song here and then we can come back to the interview.
Sure.
If that works for you guys. All right. Well, thank you guys for listening. We'll be back with Parametric in a second. Welcome back to Psychic Ceremony on CJLO 1690 AM. My name is Josh. The song you just heard was Low Sudden by Daniel Lanois from his album from 2016, Goodbye to Language. That was a suggestion that David gave me to play before the show. And I am here with Adam Cantor and David Barton, the duo known as Parametric, here live in the studio at Concordia's finest radio station. Welcome back, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
And on the note that we ended right before I played that tune, we were talking about Brian Eno's dabbles in perfume, and I reminded me of a kind of theme I wanted to ask you guys about, which is that ambient music is often I think created for consumption in very specific contexts, whether it's like, for an installation or for a film score or, I don't know, chill out room at a rave. It's designed to be kind of consumed in certain ways, sometimes very actively, other times very passively. And I'm very curious about really how you guys see your music being listened to and consumed.
Yeah, sorry for the dead air there. It's a good question. And we're a very new venture, and so it's not entirely clear who our audience is particularly, but I do think that something that would be an audience that was tuned into what we were doing and listening to it, but also it's not necessary. It would be something that would be connected to a relaxing state for sure. Mm-hmm. And so, I'm not sure if people would have to sit down to watch it or stand up to watch it, because those feel like different things. Or maybe lie down to watch the show or listen to the show would be a better way to put it.
Well, actually, there's also the start menus, like for menu screens.
Yeah, DVD menu screens. That's another DVD possibility.
DVD menu screens and hold music, of course. No, but sometimes it is interesting, because that ambient music, that term ambient music, really started to have currency after Music for Airports. Mm-hmm. And Brian Eno came up with this idea, apparently, too. The story goes that he had suffered some kind of injury and broken his leg or something, was in the hospital, and there was a radio playing, and it was just on the boundary, like just on the border of just being outside of hearing, can't hear it completely, mm-hmm. but he couldn't really hear what it was, just the sound of it, kind of a little on the edge of not hearing it.
Yeah.
And he couldn't get up to do anything about it, so he ended up just listening to this, and he came up with this idea as part of the genesis of it. But the other thing was that Music for Airports, it was music that was meant, it was designed for a certain application, mm-hmm. and to be listened, it's the idea is that it's rewarding is to listen to if you want to turn your ears onto it. And at the same time, it can also kind of meld into the background and just create an atmosphere. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things for this project we want to do as a step going forward, is to start to collaborate with a projectionist. Mm. We haven't found anyone. Actually, I don't know if you have any listeners who might be interested in collaborating on some events or creating an installation with live ambient music, because they just go together hand in hand.
Yeah, well, message either of us on Instagram if you if this is your area of expertise.
Yeah, it's true. I guess you can message Parametric on Instagram. I'm not on Instagram at all, so I...
Yeah, it's Parametric_music on Instagram.
Yes, or at Psychic Ceremony on Instagram as well. But yeah, I guess on that note, so maybe this is a label that I don't know how you'd feel about, but your music also seems evocative of some New Age music to me in some ways. Is that in sense of it's got these very meditative qualities?
I was thinking about the one that we just played with the flute and everything, mm-hmm. and I understand how you could feel that was New Agey, but to me, when I was playing it, what I was thinking about was something like 1978, and it's the opening shot of a horror movie, like the Amityville Horror or the Omen or something like that, because there's it's flute, and there's something that's evocative of the comfort and safety of a bourgeoisie existence on the East Coast of the United States. But at the same time, there's something unsettling about the slight dissonance in it that causes you to feel that certain supernaturally unpleasant things are about to occur, but you can't quite guess what they're going to be as of yet. So yes, sometimes it does border on New Agey, and sometimes it borders on the disturbing, and sometimes it borders on other things. And I think that, it's interesting because we're always checking ourselves about what our influences are and whether we sound like something or don't sound like something. But at the same time, yes, I think that it's important to just explore the feelings in whatever direction they go. Mm-hmm. However, it's hard to say about the New Agey thing, because I don't necessarily know if we're going for the spiritual underpinnings that may be connected to that. It's more like the music exists in and of itself without those signifiers attached to it. It's just my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think also that New Age music sort of it sort of came to be this subgenre of ambient music that got a bit of a bad name because the, you know, at a certain point it really proliferated. I don't hear people really talking that much about New Age music specifically as a label, but I will say this, that our music often when we're playing together, I think like, oh yeah, I got the yoga studio vibe. I definitely feel like this would be appropriate over the speakers in a yoga studio.
Yeah. And I actually have played in yoga studios a bunch in the past. And so there's certain parts about playing in yoga studios, which can be really great, which are not always necessarily connected to the music. However, it is interesting to create an ambiance through your ambient music for those people, which could be considered as new agey.
I think we're maybe running low on time here, but I guess I just want to ask, is there anything you guys want to let our listeners know about? Like, are you planning any live performances anytime soon, or what's on the horizon for Parametric?
We're going to try to get some shows, but we're really a new venture right now. And you can go to the parametric.bandcamp.com and check out our album.
We'll also probably be playing the Deppener Cafe again in the coming weeks, I would guess.
Yeah, I play there every Thursday, and sometimes it's a Parametric show and sometimes it isn't. But that's at 3 p.m. So yes, we may well be over there and check it and see. You can come and see us live.
All right. Well, thank you, David and Adam, so much for
coming
on the show today.
Thanks for having us, Josh.
This is a real pleasure. And stay tuned because they're going to play another set right after I play a quick tune and some ads to keep the station afloat. So thank you so much for being here with me, guys. And thank you for listening.
Productions Nuit d'Afrique invites you to the gala of the 17th edition of the Silly d'Or de la Musique du Monde. Come out to La Tulipe on Tuesday, April 25th at 8 p.m. for extraordinary performances from the finalists for the awards and vote to help them win the Silly d'Or, the Silly d'Argent, or the Silly de Bronze. Les Silly d'Or de la Musique du Monde gala is sure to expand your musical horizons. For more information, sillydor.com.
Do you love hip-hop and R&B? Is your Thursday afternoon lacking groove? I'm DJ Samuel V. Roberts, and I got you covered. Listen to my show, Whip Appeal. I'll be playing hip-hop bangers, R&B slow jams, and everything in between from Canada and around the globe to groove up your Thursday afternoon. Listen to Whip Appeal, Thursdays at 2 p.m. CJLO 1690 AM.
What you listening to, son?
I don't think you like it.
Well, why not? I like this new generation of music.
You are listening to CJLO 1690 AM, now with The Noise Hour.
Let me tell you, Bobby, there's nothing funny about these sounds.
Tired of listening to music your dad likes? Tune in to CJLO 1690 AM to find something that'll really shock him.
All right, welcome back. Just sending us all off with Parametric in the studio. Here they are, with a last little set on Psychic Ceremony. So I'll hand it off to them.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in. You just heard Parametric here live on CJLO 1690 AM. Thank you so much for listening. This is Ambient April, so hope you enjoyed. Stay tuned for In the Garage up next, and